I will now pass it to Jennifer Hanna, who will open today's call.
Thank you, Maria, and thank you all for joining us today. I am Jennifer Hanna, Deputy Director for ASPR's National Healthcare Preparedness Programs Branch. Before I hand it over to our first presenter, I would like to provide a brief overview of what we will cover today. Next slide. First, I will provide a few ASPR Healthcare Readiness Programs updates. Next, Shane Brandman will highlight some recently published and upcoming ASPR Tracy resources and presentation. Afterwards, Dr. Richard Hunt will provide an introduction to the ASPR Healthcare Preparedness and Response Capabilities update. Finally, we will dedicate time for a general Q&A session. Next slide, please. So I would like to take a few moments to share a few administrative updates with you all. First, I would like to provide an update regarding the medical response and surge exercise, or MRSE, requirement for the HPP cooperative agreement. We have received several inquiries from HPP recipients regarding whether healthcare coalitions will be granted a flexibility toward completing the MRSE requirement by the end of budget period 3, or June 30, 2022. We want to respond to these concerns related to completing the exercise amidst the ongoing COVID-19 response. Currently, we are leaning toward extending the period of time allotted for healthcare coalitions to complete the MRSE, while also ensuring that those healthcare coalitions that have already completed the exercise receive credit for the current budget period. Healthcare coalitions that complete the exercise in budget period 3 would not be required to complete the exercise in budget period 4 unless they wanted to conduct the exercise again. Those that have not completed the exercise in budget period 3 will have an extended period of time to complete the requirement by the end of budget period 4 or June 30, 2023. We will provide an official update and specific information regarding the flexibility in the coming days. Next slide, please. Next, I'm excited to announce that ASPR has officially completed the first phase of its transition from PHE.gov to ASPR.hhs.gov. The new website showcases ASPR's mission and priorities, along with innovative approaches to fighting COVID-19 and information on healthcare readiness, response operations, medical countermeasures, ASPR's budget and funding, and more. For your reference, a member of our team will share the direct link in the chat. Next slide, please. Finally, we would like to take a moment to spotlight ASPR's social media channels and all of the engaging content that is available to you through those platforms. ASPR is active on all major social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. And its social media posts contain a wide range of content, such as major news, headlines, job postings, recipient impact stories, and features of newly published healthcare readiness resources. If you submit an ASPR healthcare readiness story from the field, you will have the opportunity to be featured on ASPR social media. If you've published content related to the impact of your cooperative agreement funding, you can also tag us at hashtag healthcare readiness, and you may see your content reposted to our account. We invite you to follow ASPR social media at the handles on this slide to stay up to date on everything ASPR. I will now pass it over to Shane Brandman to share recent and upcoming resources for ASPR Tracy. Shane?
Thank you, Jennifer, and good afternoon, everyone. I don't know if you've gotten it yet, but I sent each and every one of you a virtual hug, teddy bear, and a piece of candy for Valentine's Day. You all deserve it for everything that you've endured and overcome in the last couple of years and going on year number 3 now. So thank you all very, very much. Next slide. I'm just going to spend a couple minutes here reorienting you to some of the newly published Tracy resources we have. I think the best resource I can put at your fingertips right now is our year in review report, which features links to more than 100 resources we published in calendar year 2021. wish we didn't have that many resources to inundate you with, but it was all out of needs and requests from people like you. So again, with the help of stakeholders and SMEs, we were able to address a multitude of challenges through the year and really focus on patient load balancing, crisis standards of care, civil unrest, workplace violence, and severe winter weather. So again, thank you to all of you that helped make Tracy what it is. We also did a nifty little video highlighting some of our partnerships and contributions since we just recently celebrated our sixth year of Tracy. So again, it's amazing that Tracy has been able to advance the way it has, but it wouldn't be here without the support of our NHPP staff and everyone here on the line. So thank you very, very much. Next slide. Now I just want to focus on some upcoming resources and make sure that you're aware. By the end of February, first week in March, we'll be distributing an updated climate change resilience and healthcare considerations document. This document is important for healthcare executives and healthcare emergency managers to just note some of the tangible, practical things that we can all start doing today to begin addressing climate change and the impact it's having. I don't need to educate anyone on the line today that climate change is obviously one of the driving factors of all the different threats and the pace of those threats that you all are having to respond to on a daily basis. So please check that out. We work very closely with a lot of SMEs, very notable SMEs on this. So we look forward to having you review that. And like all Tracy products, it's always a work in progress. So as you have more tangible stories of what you're doing in the climate change space, please forward those stories to us so we can include them in the document and continue to share so we can all learn and be better prepared in the days ahead. We also are doing a couple special studies that we've been requested to do, one on crisis standards of care and the other will be coming soon on MOCs and lessons learned. So again, some of you may have already had contact from Ask for Tracy on the crisis standards of care tracker. If you have any questions, concerns, clarifications, email me directly and I'll make sure that we make this as easy of a lift as possible. And again, probably sometime in the March timeframe, we'll be soliciting input from some of you on some of your lessons learned and what you've been able to do with using MOCs to better respond to surge issues. So again, we look forward to that. Also want to bring to your attention because we got an amazing amount of feedback on the exchange we did on healthcare workplace violence and the need for this type of education and what healthcare facilities are having to endure right now. So as a continuation of that effort on March 2nd, we'll be doing a webinar in that focus area. And we have really excited, in addition to Dr. Hunt and Dr. Hick and an individual from Hennepin Healthcare, we have a representative from the Joint Commission to be able to explain some of their new standards and thinking in this space. So we'll be soliciting registration on that next week through Jennifer's NHPP outreach. And we'll also do a Tracy Express, but please sign up for that because I think it's important information that you all need to be aware of. Again, we're continuing to do different healthcare coalition speaker series and update those. And we have an interesting speaker session coming up shortly on organ donation and the impact COVID has had on their operations and how they've overcome it. And again, for some of these areas, they may not seem like something you think about all the time, but I think we can learn from different folks like the poison control centers and what Kentucky did working with the penitentiaries with their healthcare coalition to overcome challenges, how we can better think ahead and leverage other people's thinking for issues that we're addressing on a daily basis. But again, I'll stop the presentation here, take any questions that you might have, but most importantly, happy Valentine's Day and thank you for what you do on a daily basis and continuing to support Tracy. Please rattle my cage. If we're doing anything to irritate you or we can make your life better, I'm here to serve you. And if we're not doing that, we're not doing our job. So thanks for the opportunity today.
If you have any questions for Shane, you can feel free to drop them into the chat box or raise your hand. Okay, I'm seeing none, so then I will pass it over to Dr. Hunt.
First, let me say I will miss the little box of candy hearts that were distributed on my desk every Valentine's Day in the office. That being said, let me transition over to the work of today. Thanks to all of you for taking the time today. We're in the process of revising ASPR's healthcare preparedness and response capabilities, the document that's been the point of reference for healthcare facility and healthcare system preparedness over the past 5 years. Before we get started with the capabilities update portion of this, we want to administer a quick poll. To do that, I'm going to pass this back to Kirsten, please.
Thanks, Dr. Hunt, and good afternoon, everyone. The poll question, if we can go to the next slide. There we go. So the poll question is, do you currently use the healthcare preparedness and response capabilities? Will be the pop-up should appear in a moment. And if you can just choose yes or no, we'll give everyone a minute to complete that, and then we'll show the results live. Great, we'll give everyone just a few more seconds. Okay, can we go ahead and show those results? Great, so we have 88% of respondents currently use the healthcare preparedness and response capabilities. Okay, thank you for your response, and I will go ahead and pass it back to Dr. Hunt to continue.
I did love in the chat, like, why wouldn't we? That's kind of, yeah, that's great. So today, the goals of the presentation, and Kirsten, can we advance the next slide? Great. The goals of the presentation today will be to provide an introduction to the ASPR Healthcare Preparedness and Response Capabilities Update. We're going to do that by reiterating the purpose of the capabilities, describing plans to update capabilities to address the insights learned during the COVID-19 response and other responses as well as reflect the ecosystem of healthcare preparedness and response. And we'll also request feedback on the current capabilities document and sharing how additional feedback can be collected through stakeholder engagement. Next slide. So what are the capabilities? I think actually most of you may have seen this slide in the past 5 years. The healthcare preparedness response capabilities are national strategic and operational guidelines for healthcare readiness. They're designed to serve as a roadmap for healthcare preparedness and response functions for entities that support healthcare readiness. ASPR and others also use the capabilities to support healthcare readiness, with the capabilities informing the development of funding opportunities, activities, and performance management. The capabilities were originally created in 2012. The most recent version of the capabilities applied to 2017 to 2022, and the new version will provide a vision of preparedness and response capabilities for 2023 and beyond. Next slide, please. The capabilities are high-level objectives that the nation's healthcare delivery system, including healthcare coalitions and individual healthcare organizations, should undertake to prepare for, to respond to, and to recover from emergencies. There are currently four capabilities. First is the foundation for healthcare and medical readiness, including guidance on setting up a healthcare coalition, developing coalition plans, and conducting drills and exercises. The second, healthcare and medical response coordination, emphasizing collaboration across healthcare organizations, coalitions, their jurisdictions, and the Emergency Support Function 8, ESF8, lead agency plan, as well as information sharing. Third, continuity of healthcare service delivery, focusing on providing uninterrupted, optimal medical care to all populations in the face of damaged or disabled healthcare infrastructure. And then medical surge, it pertains to the delivery in a timely and efficient way to care for their patients, even when the demand for healthcare services exceeds available supply. Next. These capabilities illustrate the range of preparedness and response activities that, if conducted, represent the ideal state of readiness in the United States. Next slide, please. So the update and the objective of the capabilities update. The update's going to address challenges and developments in healthcare preparedness and response efforts since 2017, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic. While it's going to be really important to address COVID-19 insights, the capabilities will still provide an all-hazards approach that provides guidance for many types of emergencies. The purpose of healthcare readiness is to save lives when disasters strike. To save lives, the capabilities need to support patient care and clinical operations. The capabilities also need to support healthcare organizations and a healthcare workforce that can continue to function during and after disasters. We'll reflect the perspectives of frontline healthcare workers as well as healthcare leaders and partners so that all entities within the healthcare preparedness and response functions can see themselves in the capabilities. In addition to revising the content of the capabilities, the update may also involve making structural changes to the document to best meet the needs of the field. Next. So the engagement of stakeholders, our approach to that is a recognition that the stakeholder input is critical to our process of shaping the next capabilities. We're really trying to ensure that a diverse group of stakeholders provides input and helps shape the changes throughout every phase of the process. By stakeholders, we include frontline healthcare providers, EMS, state and local government agencies with preparedness and response functions, NHPP cooperative agreement recipients, ASPR programs and leadership, federal interagency partners, healthcare and disaster professional associations and non-governmental partners, members of the public, and other audiences with roles in preparedness and response. Next slide. We're now going to review a few questions we've already been asked that we've received on this update effort. So, what updates are being considered? Based on initial internal discussions and reviews, the following themes have already arisen as potential areas that we might be able to update the capabilities on. First, we're considering ways to improve the usability of the document. We're also exploring ways to increase the focus on deliberate planning and engagement to meet the needs of at-risk individuals, as well as to ensure preparedness and response functions do not exacerbate existing health inequities and disparities. We're also considering ways to add or expand guidance around medical operations coordination cells, or MOCs, functions, tactical implementation of ESF8, load sharing and load balancing, also connected to MOX, critical care transport, telemedicine, and telecritical care in surge planning and response, and also different types of surge. For example, prolonged medical surge, pediatric surge, surge plans for crisis conditions, et cetera. Finally, we plan to explore content from the MRSE and the MRSE and the guidelines for regional healthcare emergency preparedness and response systems to improve the capabilities in specific areas. Next. So what is the relationship between the guidelines for regional healthcare emergency preparedness and response systems, regional guidelines, and the capabilities? The regional guidelines are being created in response to a statutory requirement to offer approaches to regional healthcare readiness. The stakeholder feedback and content from regional guidelines may inform the capabilities update, but the documents serve complementary roles. While both documents describe activities that strengthen healthcare preparedness and response across the healthcare delivery system, the guidelines focus explicitly on coordination for regional healthcare readiness. Next slide. So, discussion. It's not particularly easy to have a discussion in a room of 174 people that I see in terms of numbers of participants, but we're gonna give this a shot if we could. So we have a number of questions for you. And as I kind of like open up this like discussion, our hope is that you really think about this opportunity over the next, you know, like few minutes here to like really think about and respond to us, like how can we improve the capabilities that currently exist? I mean, our experience has been vast in disaster response over the past 5 years. So really it's an opportunity for you to respond in the chat. Yes, certainly you can raise your hand. We'll try to get to a couple of your questions, but as sort of a level set, like in this part of our meeting today is we're really trying to get some initial feedback on, you know, how should we approach the capabilities with an eye toward really improving what we have today? And we've had just so much experience to be able to inform that. So liberally use the chat, please. Yes, certainly raise your hands. We may be able to get to a few questions. Let's see. So I think, Kirsten, the next slide has some of our questions. Yeah. So these are the things that we wonder about, okay? And, you know, again, big picture, you know, if you can like begin to think about in the chat, begin to talk with us in the chat, like, okay, how do we improve these capabilities? That would be great. We've got specific questions too. My sense is that because we've got all these questions is everybody will like shut down. Nobody want to say anything, but that's okay because you're going to have multiple opportunities over the next coming months to be able to respond to us and be able to provide input. So this is not the first or the last opportunity to provide input as we go along with this. So here's a question. How do you currently use the capabilities? If you have used them, what's good about them? What works? And then what could be improved in a general sense? And then if you don't currently use the capabilities, why aren't you using them? What's the main reason for that? And we saw there are some of you that don't use them. So especially looking for you to inform us as to what exactly is it that makes it so you don't use them. Maybe you haven't seen them before. Maybe you're new to the program, or maybe it's like they were never useful during the past 5 years to me, and we would surely like to know why. And then what are the barriers to actually using the capabilities? Is it too long? Is it too detailed? Is it the format? I can't access it on the web easily. You know, getting down into some deep dives on that would be really helpful. Because if we're gonna go to the lengths of spending the energy together to do these, we gotta figure out what the barriers are. And then are there ways that the actual structure of the capabilities, for example, the four capabilities with corresponding objectives and activities, could be improved? I mean, you have to realize the The current iteration, the 2017 to 2022 one, was the first time we ever had the capability. So we structured it with four capabilities with objectives and activities. And is there a better way we could approach that in terms of structure? And yes, I'm sure somebody, if somebody doesn't put it in the chat, I'll put it in the chat. Form follows function. So I get that, but it would be really helpful to get a sense of the structure from your perspectives. Let's see. And then another question we have, which I think, at least for me, it's the most important. What healthcare capability has saved the most lives during the pandemic response? What healthcare capability has saved the most lives during the pandemic response? And then what other healthcare capabilities have you seen that has saved lives over the last 5 years of response efforts that are critical to include in the capabilities? Many of you have been faced with wildfires on top of pandemics, severe weather emergencies, whether it be tornadoes or hurricanes, and on and on. Of those capabilities, knowing which ones have saved the most lives would be really helpful for us to know, because those are the ones we ought to certainly include in any update. And then in terms of gaps in what we have in the current capabilities, what's been the most crippling gap? The one that, wow, we missed this one. And it ought to be in the updated one. That would be really helpful to know. So what capability gap has been the most crippling to the pandemic response? And then not just the pandemic, like the previous question, what other healthcare capability challenges or gaps have you seen in the last 5 years of response efforts that are critical to addressing the capabilities? So those are the questions that we certainly have. And when I say we certainly have, yes, we definitely don't have all the answers. You're the ones that are, you know, boots on the ground. You're actually doing this. So your responses to these questions will really help shape how we think about what this update will be in the coming months. So, Kirsten, did you happen to see anything in the chat worth highlighting? Yes. Well, it's all worth highlighting because you get responses. That's good. But any particular that we should address or respond to?
Yes, I can read a couple of the comments from the chat. We have a comment that says that they base their entire ASPR work program on the capabilities. This individual likes the current capabilities, feels they cover the core preparedness and response work. They like the simplicity of having four capabilities and really like that structure. Colorado noted that they use the capabilities to guide and support HCCs. We use them as a point of measurement guiding ongoing development. In terms of improvements, both Colorado and Arizona highlighted that we may need different sets of capabilities based on population, that rural populations may have very different needs and capacities than urban areas. And I think that's something we've already been thinking about as well. Getting lots of great comments here. Really, really appreciate them. We did get one question that I'm not exactly sure how to answer. We got a question from Keenan Jenkins that says, can you provide recommendations for Region K?
Kirsten, I can't.
Okay, yes, pocket. I wasn't sure.
They're not, my talking points are nowhere. I don't have that one, but when the pandemic's over, I'm glad to visit that area and try to figure it out. No, seriously, I don't have a specific response to that question. There was one comment that you read that I particularly picked up on, Kirsten, was the rural and urban, they're not just nuance, they are big differences. And one of the things that I think worth sharing with our participants is we've had really robust conversations here at NHPP about the equity issues, and how while we always knew the equity issue was out there, it certainly has risen to be at the forefront of many of our conversations based on what's happened during the pandemic. So, you know, how does rural versus urban play into that whole inequity piece? And I think that's a really critical thing that we have thought about for many years with the program, but I think certainly thinking about it in some new ways is going to be critical moving forward. So I appreciate that particular comment. Any other?
Yeah. I'll keep reading through them. We have one suggested improvement, asking whether it would be possible to streamline the objectives and activities that have almost become rote at this point. I recognize that there is always room for improvement on existing items, but I think they're probably specifically referring to mainly the capability one on foundation that, you know, in many cases, most HCCs at this point already have plans and have done some of those initial steps.
Yeah, on that one specifically, no, yeah, keep them coming, but let me comment on that one. In terms of my experience with that, it is fascinating, as many of you may have attended our the healthcare response leadership course in Anniston that we've had up until the pandemic, basically shut it down because of the pandemic. But I think a lot about that foundation piece. And while it may be very much rote and sort of like, why are we doing the foundation? Shouldn't we have moved way beyond that? The fascinating part is because of turnover in personnel, because of, for example, restructuring of coalitions, essentially the change that occurs over time with coalitions, not to mention everything else, having that foundation there has interestingly served a purpose even like 5 years later because of new people coming on board and like they're trying to scratch their head, they're scratching their heads trying to figure out what the heck is this coalition thing. And then suddenly there's a sort of an anchoring document that helps them along. And maybe it's an appendix, maybe, I mean, I don't know. I'm just like throwing ideas out here to be able to be responsive to that. Before we move on, Kirsten, Jennifer, do you have any comments based on what you've been seeing before we move forward with Kirsten reading some more?
Oh, I don't have any additional comments right now. I think you can just keep moving through the comments. I think the only other thing is that as folks consider and think about the capabilities, you know, when we first developed the capabilities, they were primarily focused. And I won't say necessarily targeted to the hospital preparedness program, but those are probably the largest, the primary audience that was using the capabilities. One of the things that we want to ensure, I mean, as we stated already, that this is a strategic national document for the ideal state of preparedness and response for the nation's healthcare delivery system. But also, you know, we know that the capabilities, as we said, cascaded down to the hospital preparedness program recipients. Many of the capabilities were included, incorporated, or leveraged for our program requirements for the HPP cooperative agreement. But recognizing that, you know, since that time, we've had the regional disaster health response system sites that have been identified, as well as the Hospital Association Cooperative Agreement, and also the, you know, all of our Ebola activities at the time, which now have become our National Special Pathogen System. So what we want to do as well is to think about and look at the capabilities through the lens of how they can apply or cascade to all of those other programs as well as you consider and think about, you know, what improvements can we make to the current set of capabilities?
Thanks, Jennifer.
I appreciate your like bringing up that, you know, our first capability was focused on coalition building, and we built, in addition to coalitions, other preparedness and response for healthcare. So that's going to be important to incorporate. Kirsten, back to you.
In terms of a suggestion on what saved the most lives, we had a comment saying medical surge has obviously saved the most lives. They mentioned during a recent New Year's Eve Marshall fire that required multiple healthcare facilities to be evacuated, the fact that they had engaged in multiple TTXs, trainings and exercises for evacuation, had a direct impact on the rapid nature of evacuations that took place. In terms of the structure of the document, we received a comment noting that most activities are cross-cutting across several capabilities, that the organization of the current document for their grants management creates some redundancy and does not necessarily allow them to highlight how the capabilities work together. So that may be a suggestion of thinking about the structure of the document. We've got another comment from Montana about the, you know, really focusing on the rural capability needs as well, and that, you know, that the needs differ from urban. So that seems to be a continued theme. I see that also from South Dakota as well, noting, you know, that they have many rural and frontier communities with small populations that don't have access to those resources. We have another comment that's looking at that most of their time, effort, and funding revolves around capability one, which really helps them so they can better accomplish capability four, which looks at the medical surge specifically. Having the structure in place in that foundation, foundational capability is more valuable than maybe the other components. We really love seeing all these comments. I'll just keep reading through, and Dr. Hunt, please jump in if you have thoughts you want to share on any of those.
Sure. Ditto on that. I mean, I mentioned in the green room for this, I really didn't expect much response given the breadth of what the capabilities are trying to do. Plus, we have a lot of discussion questions here, but the response is gratifying, far beyond what I had imagined, for sure. And you know, as I'm, again, just sort of doubling down, this is like the first, opportunity to really start thinking about it with us, and there will be other opportunities coming. So yeah, Kirsten, let's go back to some of these and go ahead and read some of them, please.
Great. We got a suggestion to consider structuring the annual conference around successful efforts to accomplish the capabilities by states and coalitions. Thinking about sustainability, leadership engagement, establishing coalitions as viable regional ESFA leads, integration with FEP and others, regional procurement systems, et cetera. A lot of great suggestions in there. And I realize this is separate from the annual conference, but we are in Was Work thinking about the capabilities. We are thinking about potentially including some, you know, examples of successful efforts or of promising practices that have been seen or just examples to help bring some of the things to life as well. So that's definitely something we're looking at even with the document. In Kansas, the capabilities are used to guide and create milestones for the HCCs. They provide the programmatic side of the grant. In terms of the primary barrier, they noted that it really for them is the sheer level of reporting and deliverables that are needed, that the HCCs spend more of their time creating documents, reviewing documents, and approving documents. And we got another comment agreeing with that comment about the administrative workload there. Let's see, we got a comment, I believe, from Puerto Rico, based their program on the capabilities. They noted, I think it's important that the activities that are a given can be streamlined. Recommendation would be taking into consideration differences based on territories, which are different than mainland, which I think is a great suggestion.
Oh, Kirsten, while you're scrolling through there, I noted the one comment in the chat about the healthcare workforce piece. And while I mean, this kind of doubles down back on the health equities and always knowing it was important, for example. But now with our healthcare workforce diminished substantially because of the pandemic, while we certainly included the concept of protecting the healthcare workforce in the previous capabilities, at least I'm pretty sure we included that in some ways. That's going to be absolutely critical moving forward, independently of any capabilities. But without a workforce, you have no healthcare preparedness and response. So I certainly grasp that, not just grasp it, but I think our entire program grasps that in a substantive way. And then trying to figure out how to like rebuild it as well, I think is important, independently of the capability, that's going to be important moving forward. So thanks, Kirsten, back to you.
Thanks, Dr. Hunt. We have a few questions in here noting from people that they would love to share these questions with their team and provide feedback later. Really appreciate that. And there will definitely be opportunities. I think with following up from this session, when the materials are sent out, we can be sure to include, we'll include these questions and an email address that feedback can be sent to in the meantime. We also will be following up with you all about potential small group sessions later on where there's an opportunity to provide feedback in a smaller group, maybe potentially on specific topics. So we will definitely be providing these and we'll share and welcome any feedback that comes in after this, especially if you want to share this with your team, with your HCCs, with others. So really appreciate those suggestions in the chat.
I think at this juncture, it makes a lot of sense to like turn this back over to Jennifer. I just want to thank everyone for like working with us on this. You're already working with us in a really substantive way with like all kinds of great chat comments that will help inform us. And yeah, I mean, this meeting, unless I'm missing something, Jennifer, it's in the public domain. You know, take screenshots of the thing, whatever, to get the questions out and get us some feedback. So Kirsten, okay, over to Jennifer at this point.
Yes, Jennifer, if you wanna do the larger Q&A that is great. Otherwise we're happy to go through if you think there's a little more time, either way.
We have a few more minutes for this particular session. If there's any burning questions that we want to make sure that we get out during this call. So we can go through a few more questions, Kirsten, and then I will be happy to take over from there for more general Q&A, but appreciate all of the great response so far.
Good, I've got a little more time. So let me ask a specific question, see what we can get in the chat. That's not on the discussion questions, but something we talked about, we've talked about a little bit internally, not extensively, but the length of the capabilities, it's a large document. It really is large. And at places, you know, there's some big picture things and there's a lot of granular stuff in there. Based on what it is today, would you like to see it shorter, longer? Would you like to see it with like, okay, a short, like, you know, overview and then a bunch of appendices? And I know that's pretty granular, but just trying to get a sort of a end user feedback on that would be really nice to see. Again, this won't be the only opportunity, but it's something we've talked about. Kirsten, any other chat comments in there you want to go ahead and share?
Yeah, not sure we can walk through all of them, but a couple ones I really wanted to highlight that are things we're really thinking about as well. I see multiple comments about, you know, a resilient workforce, and especially I think Kurt's comment that says we need to have a way to support workforce recovery following major health and medical crises, especially in the shadow of the pandemic. I know even just in my conversations with you, Dr. Hunt, this is always front and center. And I think this is really something that we are thinking about as we're revising the capabilities, you know, how to make sure that we're understanding that and really addressing the workforce piece.
Yeah, Kirsten, one of the things that I've had discussions with many colleagues about is, and we actually asked a question on Rounds on this, like for the healthcare workers that have left, and at least, you know, and you see the news reports just like I do, and there are a lot of people have left, and I asked, are they coming back? And people don't think they're coming back. So how do we get like, So if you have a workforce that's 100% pre-pandemic and then it's X% that's lower post-pandemic, we have diminished capability and capacity. So how can we collectively in healthcare readiness support the coming responses with a diminished healthcare workforce in terms of its numbers? And then also work to add to get back up to sort of like a level playing field, like back to 100% of what it was pre-pandemic. And I, you know, with to ignore that moving forward in healthcare readiness, again, whether or not it's inserted, how it's inserted or not inserted in the capabilities is kind of a moot point, but it needs to happen one way or the other. So my editorial comment for the day.
Great. The last comment I'll flag here, and feel free to continue putting comments in here about the capabilities, even as we transition on. But I've seen a few comments in here about alignment or crosswalking between the HP, between the FEP capabilities and the healthcare capabilities that we're discussing today. You know, I think that's, I think someone flagged it specifically for ESF8 coordination. And I think that is something that we're definitely looking at as well. So appreciate those suggestions. I think from here, we can turn it back over to you, Jennifer. I will flag, it looked like there was one question that came in at the end, Jennifer, that asks when do we anticipate that the BP4 application will be available, which I think is a question more for you rather than our specific capabilities discussion.
Yep, absolutely. I saw that come in. Thank you, Kirsten. And thank you, Dr. Hunt. And thanks to all of you, of course, for the great feedback that you have provided so far regarding this initial conversation and dialogue regarding the update to the ASPR healthcare preparedness and response capabilities. I was not surprised about the response rate or all of the discussion that people are interested. So I'm pleasantly surprised, and thank you for validating my initial thoughts about this particular conversation. But to move on to one of the questions was asking about the status of the FY22 budget period for non-competing continuation application instructions for the Hospital Preparedness Cooperative Agreement. We are working very quickly and diligently on incorporating some of our internal feedback, and then also incorporating the flexibility regarding Mercy into that, so that we can move the application for application instructions for grants management and our Office of General Counsel review. Our desire was to hopefully get that out by this week, but it's more likely going to be early next week. So we are committed to getting that out as soon as possible, so that you will have the maximum amount of time to be able to respond. You'll still have the 60 days to respond, as all of you, as many of the, well, everyone knows that we are currently in a continuing resolution and are still awaiting our final budget numbers. So it'll be a two-part application. One is for the initial application based on your budget period 3, work plan and budget numbers, but then we will keep reforms open until we receive the final budget numbers, and then you'll be able to make changes and make any revisions based upon those final budget numbers. But that information will also be included within the continuation application instructions. I also saw a number of questions that were part of a part of the capabilities discussion about the RLDC, and for those that may not know, that is the recipient level direct cost. We will be revisiting the RLDC as a part of our planning for the new 5-year project period for the HPP cooperative agreement. So your comments are noted there, and about the challenges that you have encountered related to that cap, but that will also be a part of the a part of the conversation as well. And I think we will see if there are any, okay. Wanted to see if there are any additional questions. As I said, this is a time when you can ask questions from our presenters. but then also any general questions that you may have. It is not limited, of course, to the HPP recipients. It's for all the recipients that are on this particular call. And you can either enter your question in the chat, or you can raise your hand and you'll be unmuted to be able to be unmuted to be able to answer, be able to ask that question. Okay, I see here that I have a question that just came in. How regarding the BP3 reporting requirements and flexibilities aren't listed on the HPP website to go with the BP2 and BP1 list. We are currently working on those. I know it's pretty late within BP3, but we will get those flexibilities posted as well. Many of the flexibilities related to BP3 were included within the continuation application instructions for BP3. So, but we'll make sure that those get posted as well. And I have a question here regarding what is the next milestone for the ASPR grant funding report? And Jennifer, if you wouldn't mind to let me know which cooperative agreement you are referring, since we have all recipients on this call. In the interim, if others have questions, please feel free to ask those questions. Okay, what is the time look while we're waiting for that follow-up question from Jennifer for clarification? We've got a question here that says, what is the timeline for determining the leaning towards a Mercy extension? In the coming days, I'm actually going to put out the official guidance. So basically, what I stated was probably what is going to be the flexibility that will be in place. Just want to make sure that we have all of the I's dotted and the T's crossed as far as the language for that, and we'll put out some official information and we'll communicate that and socialize it both via our bulletin, which hopefully all of you are subscribers, and then as well as we'll include it, that language will also be included in the BP4 continuation application instructions for the Hospital Preparedness Program Cooperative Agreement. Thanks, Jennifer, for clarifying. So about what the next milestone is for the ASPR Hospital Association Cooperative Agreement Funding Report. The next milestone will be the end of year report. We know that the budget period ends, the current budget period for the Hospital Association Cooperative Agreement ends April 9th of this year. And then the end of year report is typically due 90 days after that. So we will either, we anticipate that CAMP will be back online and we will provide information and announcement for when that end of year report template opens, or rather when that module opens for you to submit your end of year data. And we'll give you ample time to be able to respond and to provide the responses, a report on those performance measures for the Hospital Association Cooperative Agreement. Okay, are there any additional questions? Okay, so there's a question here about, is not the next milestone the search estimator tool? So the search estimator tool applies to the Hospital Preparedness Cooperative Agreement recipients. We did provide information regarding the search estimator tool that we would not be collecting that while we are in the process of re-examining the Mercy to see how those two will work together and if it will be needed. So the surge estimator tool, which would have been due this year in March 31st, we have waived that. And that way we'll also make sure that that is included within those BP3 flexibilities that was already requested, that we include that information as part of those flexibilities. A great question. Okay, seeing that we are about 3 minutes from the top of the hour, of course, you know, feel free to send your questions to the resource mailbox, hpp@hhs.gov. But we're going to move to our final slide, and if I could get someone to go to that next slide, we will go from there. Okay, thank you. So again, thank you to all of our presenters for their time today and for your very active participation in today's meeting. As a reminder, we remind you to share any stories regarding how you or your subrecipients are using ASPR funding to make a positive impact on your communities. If you have a story to share, please fill out our Stories from the Field submission form or reach out to your field project officer for more information. A member of our team will drop the Story from the Field submission form link in the chat for easy reference. Because, of course, we look forward to hearing about all the great work that you are doing. We know that it has already been stated early on and throughout this call. We know that this has been, it's been a tough couple of years, but you keep doing what you're doing tirelessly. So it goes without saying. I mean, we would be remiss if we didn't commend you all for the hard work that you are doing during this fight, not only during COVID, but with all of the other responses. And you just the overwhelming amount of work that you are being asked to do on a daily basis. But we certainly appreciate your partnership with us. And of course, if there's anything that we can do to assist you, to improve our programs, to help you, please let us know. And with that, we are going to conclude our call about a minute early. But again, want to thank everyone for your participation. Have a great day. And we look forward to meeting with all of our recipients again in this particular venue in about, next quarter. So thanks, everyone. Again, have a great day.